Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess joins me, and joining us from open-wheels.com is the awesome Tanner Watkins. Tanner and Jess, how are we tonight?
Pretty good.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Sure, man. Thanks for filling in while Matt is off getting ready to get married. I'm sure he's having a lot of fun with last-minute wedding planning this week. So congrats, Matt. Hope you have a great weekend. And we are also going to have a great weekend at the track, so let's jump right into it. First up this week, we're going to go through some IndyCar Grand Prix preview, some fan questions, and a little bit of news here and there, but we will save the fun Indy 500 stuff starting for next week's episode. So first up, the IndyCar Grand Prix. It hasn't been the most exciting race in the 5 years it's been run so far. So my first question to either of you guys, are we going to see a different winner than Will Power or Simon Pagenaud?
I hope so. I mean, not to knock them, but yeah, we need to see a little bit of a shakeup. Some passing would be nice. I'm gonna go way out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that Rosenqvist is going to be our winner this weekend.
Wow, you just beat me to my next question. Tanner, go ahead.
I like that. I'm actually going to go with his teammate, Scott Dixon, for this weekend. And the reason is, last year I was thinking back, and last year's Indy Grand Prix was kind of the turning point for Dixon in his championship run. They'd kind of struggled up until the month of May last year, and I remember, you know, he really pointed to that first race in May as a way that they found a little bit of speed in their road and street course program. And that kind of launched them into the second half of the year, really, where they kicked it into high gear. So I'm not holding my breath that it won't be anybody other than Penske, because it certainly could be by the end of the day on Saturday. But if it's anybody, I think Scott Dixon's going to step up this weekend.
I like both your answers. I've gone with this pick twice this year for my race winner, and I've been very wrong both times. And I think our buddy Faux Will Power probably doesn't like that I'm going to pick him again. But Will Power has had awful luck so far this year in the first four races. Actually, there's a Twitter account who does, you know, some kind of analytical stats for IndyCar based on his starting position. Will Power has had the worst luck so far in 2019 out of any driver. His luck just has to change at some point, because it's not like he's had a terrible start to the year, or at least in qualifying. So I think Will Power is my pick. So I am going to say yes, he's going to win for a, where'd my list here go? A third straight year, and 4 out of 5, and what would that 4 out of 6 total will be Will Power. But yeah, I think you guys are on to something, and brings me to my next question here. I'm going to jump around on my list. So it's supposed to be much cooler this weekend than it was. I think it was last year in the Grand Prix weekend. I think the high on race day is only like 62 degrees. Do we think the cooler weather will help, you know, guys get a little bit more racy and make some more passes on this notoriously difficult to pass road course?
No. 2 years ago, I wore a winter coat, a hat, and gloves to the track for the very first time, mind you, on GP race day, and the race was still boring. So, unfortunately, I don't think the cooler weather is going to help.
Yeah, and I hate to agree with you, but I think I have to. And really, you look at this track, and it is somewhat of a bland road course. I mean, I love the speedway as a whole, but the road course really doesn't have a whole lot of character, and really doesn't have a whole lot of opportunities in the way of passing. So the way I look at it is, it's up to the drivers to make a race out of it. You know, we got to have something come about, like Colton Herta and Pato O'Ward continuing their battle from what was a tremendous Indy Lights race. I think it was the second race of the weekend last year. And honestly, that was probably the best race of that whole weekend, was Colton and Pato going lap to lap, wheel to wheel. And eventually Colton ended up winning the race and sweeping the weekend. But it's got to be something like that, where some dudes just, they're even enough to where they can battle for a few laps It naturally plays out. And, you know, fans are going to have to look up and down the running order to maybe find those battles, because likely it won't come from the top three or four positions where there's a pass in the last five laps or anything like that. You know, you're going to have to kind of hunt and peck to find the battles, but I think there might be something here or there to find.
So just because you guys agreed with each other, I'm going to disagree with you, and I'm going to come up with my reason on the spot here. I don't have a reason pre-planned. I'm going to say we are going to see something wild. You know, we've seen the first, you know, four races of the year now, and you know, guys have been racing relatively clean for the most part. I think we've only had four or five cautions total. Don't quote me on that one, but I'm pretty sure it's only been a few. So, you know, I think we're going to see something wild. I obviously think Will Power is going to win, but I think there's going to be a lot of action through the field. We have, you know, like Tanner mentioned, the what seems to be the weekly battle between Pato and Colton Herta that are mixing it up at some point through the field, or Pato passing Graham Rahal in a crazy spot on the outside. We're going to see something crazy like that again for sure. And didn't somebody last year fly through over a speed bump at some point? Oh, wasn't it Piggott?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see Piggott go flying again. And I don't know. I'm expecting the top five to be, you know, pretty crazy in the end after I pick Will Power as the winner. So we will transition next into, who do we think is going to have a rough weekend? This you can pick a team or you can pick a driver. It doesn't really matter to me, but who are we not looking for to have a great weekend right now? Jess?
I'm going to go with Max Chilton. He's just had a very lackluster season overall, and I think the trend is going to keep up. I just don't see him coming out and really throwing together a good race. Even though I think he has probably pretty good equipment to do well, I just feel like he's struggling this year. Maybe his head's not quite into it as much as it should be. So I think he's going to have a really poor weekend.
Yeah, and on the flip side, I look at a guy like Ed Jones. You know, this season and the few starts that Ed has gotten with Ed Carpenter Racing, I just feel like he hasn't quite gotten the sense or settled into his role there at ECR. And I also think he may be looking ahead to the 500 a little bit. You know, huge race for him and Scuderia Corsa, who are, you know, at least keeping an eye on things long enough to see if they want to come with a full-time IndyCar program at any point in the future. You know, it's going to be big for them to have a good run in the 500 if they want to continue considering any long-term plans as a standalone team, but also for Ed's stock and getting his chance in the 500. I just seem like this is almost like a weekend in college football where you're looking ahead to the next big game. And, you know, for one, you haven't even been playing very well coming into this weekend, and you got an emphasis on next weekend. I don't know. I just feel like this is going to be a tough one for Ed Jones at a track where he hasn't been spectacular. So if he's a candidate for maybe having a rough weekend, that's my pick.
I'm very mad at both you guys because you both have stolen my answers so far. So I've had to dig deep here. I'm going to say I think we're going to see, and almost for the same reason that Tanner just mentioned, we might see Tony Kanaan and or both of the Foyt cars struggle. You know, they've been pretty adamant that, you know, listen, the 500 is the race we think we've got a good shot to, you know, do well at, or at least start turning the season around. So they might be looking ahead. I know my favorite sports teams do that on a yearly basis, so I wouldn't be surprised if it happens again this weekend. And Kanaan's, you know, average finish so far this year is 16, and his average qualifying position is 21st. So, you know, definitely, you know, Foyt in general is not off to a good start. You know, Leist's average finishing position is 18.5. So I just don't see it in them right now. But as I'm sure I'll mention next week, I'm projecting big things, at least for Tony Kanaan in the 500. Let's see here. All right, so turn one predictions. We've done this about three races in a row now, at least talked about it, and we've been wrong every time. So, guys, as our poll of the week, are we going to see some craziness in turn one like we've predicted at least the last couple races? And I think we've seen every year in the Indy GP something happen in turn one, lap one.
It's going to be a hot mess disaster. I'm calling it now.
Yes.
I'm going to go the other way. I think this year might be the year they squeak through and everybody makes it in clean. I've been impressed with most of the race starts so far this year, so hopefully that carries over into the IndyCar Grand Prix. It just gets so tight there in that first couple corners with the right left that it's breeding contact like we've seen the last few years. But I'm cautiously optimistic this year.
All right, I'm going to take your side in this one for the first time in the first 12 or so minutes of the episode. I just feel that, you know, this is the one race where, I mean, those first couple turns are pretty ridiculous, and somebody's going to get over anxious, kind of getting all excited to be at Indianapolis and just, you know, get the month started off well and make a mistake. So, you know, with that, I don't think do we have any other last minute IndyCar Grand Prix thoughts before we move on?
I don't.
I've got one quick thing I want to pose to you guys and just get your thoughts on it. With the weather being cold this weekend, you know, that should bring grip levels up just a little bit. It's better than if it was scorching hot for somebody like an Elio Castroneves. For a guy like Elio, obviously he's got all the starts under his belt that he needs to hop in the car and be successful if he's got a good car under him. But coming in from sports cars, and this is his first race in the year, do you think those cold temps and maybe a little bit added grip help him along just a little bit more to where he could maybe have a better day on Saturday than if it was 85, 90 degrees and the car was sliding all over the top of what's pretty much a flat track at the IMS road course?
Oh, Jess, you want to take this?
I mean, I can see it helping some for sure. Will it make him come out and be the race winner? I'm not going to go that far, but I definitely feel like he's probably going to have a little bit of added comfort where he wouldn't if it was warmer. But, you know, who knows? I mean, he's got so much history in IndyCar and, like you said, the road racing that I really feel like he could tackle it either way.
Yeah, and I'm not to give away my fantasy IndyCar picks, but he is one of my picks for the weekend. But, you know, he finished sixth last year after starting 10th, and it was not as cool last year, I think. So, you know, this year with grip levels being a little bit higher, you know, especially if it stays as cool as they're expecting, I think he's in contention to be on the podium. Yeah, you know, I think he can come right in after not having been in IndyCar since the, what was that, the Circuit of the Americas test back in February, and do just fine. If he could do 10th to 6th last year, I think he can easily contend, you know, at least for a podium or a top 5 finish. So, great question.
Thanks.
All right, so we will move on. We'll do a couple fan questions here before we get to the Stump the Host for the week. This first one, I'm actually going to go to the second one first. Why don't teams, in your opinion, run both the GP and the Indy 500 more? So I guess that would be more of the one-off teams like Dryan Reinbold, etc. And that comes from us. His Twitter handle is at Ronkel. I hope I'm getting that right, but it's WRONKLAE. Jess, go ahead.
I mean, I think it's basically a money thing. I mean, you know, they're risking cars, especially in turn one, like we talked about. And frankly, I just don't see it having much of a payoff. Obviously, running the GP isn't really going to translate into more track time for the 500. Even though they're on track, it really doesn't translate at all. So I just don't see an advantage for the teams to do it.
Yeah, I agree. Following up on that, I think it's money and labor. Like you said, there's not much you can gain from running the GP if your focus is really the 500, other than just getting your team back in the rhythm of things. you know, obviously you could lose money from busted off bits and parts from the road course trim, which if you're a one-off team, you probably have to buy new pieces. If you hadn't run the road course programs before, that's an added expense. And then your team has to translate or convert your car over from road course trim to super speedway trim, because you likely don't have just a spare chassis sitting around that's got the speedway trim on it. And anytime you do anything like that where you're converting a road course car to speedway trim, it leaves yourself open to, you know, something not being tied together perfectly, you know, electronic problems or anything similar to what maybe Alonso experienced on the open test day. It just leaves yourself vulnerable to making a mistake, and then you're losing time out of your actual 500 practice allotment. So yeah, I think it's the financial plus the risk of the labor and you know, just making a mistake along the way.
Yeah, I think you guys have both hit great points. And I think from a sponsorship perspective, maybe they're thinking, listen, we'd rather devote, I don't know, $500,000, $750,000 to this one gigantic race that's going to do great on TV, or, you know, at least that's what I'm expecting it to do very well on TV. And the Indy Grand Prix on NBC, you know, hasn't been on regular NBC yet, so it's a little bit of an unknown. Maybe that'll change next year if sponsors are willing to add some more money, but you guys are both spot on that one. So thank you, Mr. Runkle. Moving on, question number two comes to us from Andrew Barker at F1. Andrew, which engine manufacturer do you project to have a stronger month of May? I'll turn it to Tanner first this time.
Yeah, I don't really have much rhyme or reason, but I feel like this is a Chevrolet month, in my opinion. I think that'll be led heavily by Team Penske and ECR. You know, I'm not sure Foyt is going to be able to sustain success throughout the month. I think they'll have flashes, and I'm skeptical about Carlin and honestly, Alonso, to be perfectly honest. I think he's going to qualify somewhere in the middle to back half of the field, just with some of the growing pains that they're going to go through this month and working with Carlin, who granted is kind of still going through some of the same growing pains themselves, as you know, it's been a multi-year IndyCar program now, but they're not quite as established as somebody like Andretti. So McLaren was a little spoiled back in 2017. So I think they're going to be up against it a bit, but getting back to your question, I think Chevrolet is going to have a good month with guys like Team Penske, ECR, and I think Dryden Reinbold is going to show pretty well as well.
I'm going to agree with you, Chevy. I'm going to add in that this is historically a Chevy track. I mean, Chevy has a huge presence at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and not that Honda can't come out and do great things, but I just feel like Chevy always has kind of a home field advantage, so to speak.
Well, again, I'm going to disagree with you guys, and I'm not just doing this because you both picked Chevy. This was going to be my answer to begin with. So for everybody out there listening, this is not just me disagreeing, but Honda really has been on their game this year, even more so than last year when they, you know, won the Constructors' Championship. And I think they're going to continue that. I think, yeah, I know they've had a few engine failures throughout the year to start the year so far, but they've got 1, 2, 3 of the 4 wins to start the year, and a handful of, you know, plus Scott Dixon's 3 podiums, and so, you know, it's looking like a Honda year so far, and I think, you know, any changes or tweaks they've made to worry about to fix that, the, you know, the few engine issues they've had early on should be coming through for the month of May. So thank you very much, Andrew, for a great question there. All right, it is Stump the Host time, and our Stump the Host was actually a fan question that I decided to turn into the Stump the Host. So I hope you guys are both ready. Thank you to at Jeff W. Benson for asking the question, and I'm going to turn it on both of you guys. 1 point if you can give me the driver's name. 1 point if you can give me the decade. What year did drinking the milk in Victory Lane begin, and who was the driver? And I'll start with Jess.
It was in the 50s, and
I'm going to give you a half point for the 50s. But I can't give you a full point because it was revived back in the 1950s. Okay.
So my second thing was going to be the 30s.
Yep. All right. Okay. So you get a point. We'll give you a point. That's fine. We'll do it price of
I almost we'll want to say, was it 1934?
You're very close, but no.
Okay. Anywho, I can't remember the driver. I'm going to be honest.
Tanner?
I'm going to take a swing at the year. Was it 1936?
You have gotten a point.
Okay. Was the driver Louis Meyer?
Tanner wins.
Okay.
All right.
Very, very well done. Thank you, Jeff. Yes, just for those wondering about the tradition, 1947, 1955, milk was apparently no longer offered, but the practice was revived in 1956, and outside of the one unmentionable year, has been a tradition every year. So,
and I do know what kind of milk Louis Meyer drank.
Okay, go ahead. You still can't win, but I'll give you a point.
Random fact: it was buttermilk.
Yes.
Yeah, he wanted buttermilk, which grosses me out a little bit. But yeah.
Yeah, just sounds nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never had the buttermilk. I don't know. It seems out there.
It's very thick. It's like thicker than half and half.
Like a solid liquid.
Yeah, basically.
Kind of like ice cream, but gross.
Yeah, like melted ice cream. That's a good
melted ice cream. Okay. Yeah. I'm kind of intrigued. If anybody in Indianapolis has buttermilk and can find me, I will try it.
I will do a buttermilk shot. You do know they sell it,
right?
Yeah, buttermilk shots. That's probably okay to do at the racetrack.
I'm going to buy buttermilk just to make you guys do it because they sell buttermilk. I use it in some recipes, but I've never actually just drank it.
All right. If anybody would like to join us, just tweet us after you listen to this ridiculousness, and we will have a buttermilk shot place at the track. Jess, I will turn it over to you for the next two fan questions.
All right. So our next question is actually two questions. So the first one, well, they're both from Mike Silver, which is at Tudor Indy. The first one, so if I can't remember, did he say if you own a car or if you're driving a car?
That's a very good question. So
I think it was own a car.
Yes, I'm pretty sure you're right there.
Okay, so if we own a car for the 500, what would be the nickname for the car? And he gave the example of the Dean Van Line special. So he wants to be like the old school names for the cars. So Mike, go ahead.
Oh man. I've been thinking about this one since Mike tweeted it to us, I don't know, last night or the night before, and I really haven't come up with a good answer. So I'm going to be really cheesy here. If I'm a car owner and that means the podcast is doing really well. I'm very happy. So I am going to call it the Pit Lane Parlay Special.
Boring.
I know. I couldn't get creative with that. I have one if I was I was thinking if I was Felix Rosenquist or Marcus Ericsson, you could do something like the Flying Swede Special. that sounds a little bit
That's
more
nice.
Fun.
Yeah.
But once you threw that owner part in there, I went, uh-oh, that wasn't what I was prepared for.
Well, fine. So be a driver then.
I've got another one. If you're Canadian, you could be the maple syrup special. But
you're not Canadian.
I'm just saying, if you are Canadian.
It's supposed to be your car.
All right. My car would be the cheesesteak special.
Okay. I can respect that.
All right. All right, well, Tanner, what about you?
Well, since we're on it, then I'll be the buttermilk special. I think that's how I'll go with that. No, if we're doing Pit Lane Parlay stuff, looking at your guys' logo, I like the blue line special. You got a little blue line underneath the pit in your logo and a little tip of the cap to our servicemen and women. So let's do the blue line special.
I like it.
Jess?
Man. Okay, so I don't know. I feel like it's got to be something to do with Disney because I'm so obsessed with Disney. So I don't know. How about, I just want to call it the Mouse Special. Like, not even the Mickey Mouse, just the Mouse Special.
The Mighty Mouse? What do we call Darren Manning that we just talked about like 10 minutes ago before we started recording?
I literally can't remember it now.
Well, okay, so Mike is really bad because we've told him this same answer like the last like 4 weeks in a row. Like
the Angry Mouse?
No. Danger Mouse.
Danger Mouse. That's it.
See, Tanner forgot too, and we only talked about it about 30 minutes ago.
But he only heard it for the first time last week. So
that's fair.
I get a small pass.
All right, Jess, go ahead.
Okay, so the next question, also from Mike Silver, is who is going to get that TBA SPM seat?
I'll turn it over to Tanner first on this one.
Okay, well, you know, I think the much of the writing on the wall, and the walls are all around us at this point, says that it's going to be Oriel Servia. And if it is Oriel, I think that's a pretty smart, safe pick. He's obviously incredibly knowledgeable, very well-spoken driver, and he can relay his thoughts on the performance of the car around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway about as well as anybody. He's a very interesting listen if you ever pick up his radio during practice and in the race. But yeah, it's looking like Oriel Servia in that number 77 Honda.
Oh boy. You know, I don't know if I have another pick other than Servia, but if I'm going to go out of left field here, because I keep, you know, reading, there's, you know, multiple possibilities. I'm pulling up a list here. Give me 1 second. Could we see somebody like Tristan Vautier sneak in there? Probably not. RC Enerson, maybe, you know, he had the money for testing only. Maybe they decide last minute, all right, let's throw some money at the Indy 500. And I'm going to skip naming one driver because I know Tanner wants to talk about him at the end of the episode, but he would also be a good fit. But I think most likely we're going to see Oriel Servia. I've heard him say at the track a couple times this year, yeah, I've got everything ready to go. So definitely curious as to why it's not yet announced, but I'm sure in, 5 or 6 days from when we're recording, and probably 2 or 3 days from when you're listening, we'll know the answer to that one.
I hope we know it before 5 or 6 days from now, because that would be practice time.
Math is hard.
But I'm gonna go with, yeah, Servia's got it. I mean, they would be kind of crazy at this point to not give it to him. I mean, he does have the experience. He knows, you know, what to say to get the car to his liking. I think that he would be a good fit there. So yeah, I definitely see it being him. I really don't even have a left field one for this one, which is shocking, but you know what always happens when I pick somebody, right?
It's going to end up being like Sebastian Saavedra, because we're all picking Servia or somebody easy.
No, it's going to be even more crazy. It's going to be one of my who?
Yeah, like my buddy Augustin Canapino.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So I am trying to pull up my list here. Let's see here. All right. So we're going to switch gears from the fan questions real quick. Something that Adam Stern reported on today. I'm curious to see what you guys think about. I should preface this by saying this was from a German article that Adam Stern translated. So, you know, take this with a grain of salt, but it's worth talking about because we talked about it with the Porsche discussion last week. Michael Andretti said that he believes if, a hybrid or maybe some sort of greener energy type engine was available, it would certainly attract more manufacturers, and doesn't believe it would actually add that much to the cost. Now, I have no idea how developing a hybrid type engine would work in terms of financials. It doesn't seem like it would be a cheap thing to me, but what do you guys think? Is Andretti on to something here? Do you agree?
I can take the go ahead, Jess.
Okay, I was gonna say no, I don't agree. We just talked about this, what was it, last week? I am personally, I just like the tradition of everything being fuel powered, but I mean, I get it. I do get it because I know that manufacturers like to use racing as kind of a test for different parts that may end up in actual street vehicles eventually. So I can see both sides, but I still think that, nope, I want my tradition.
I think this is an interesting conversation because if IndyCar agrees to this and says, okay, you can come in and you can design a hybrid engine, but they say you have to keep the price point around what Chevrolet and Honda are charging now. You know, A, the manufacturer coming in, if they still go ahead with it, they're probably going to be operating at quite a loss to develop a hybrid engine and then charge the same rate as, you know, a traditional engine. So I'm not sure if that would ever work out, but if Michael's seeing it in that sort of viewpoint, where, you know, the end result isn't that much added expense for the teams, then yeah, that's obviously a great option for them and it increases the prestige of the series as a whole. But I'm not sure you're going to find a manufacturer to sign on to those terms. But just looking at it in an overall sense, obviously Michael's going to know more about this team ownership finance structure than I would, but I'm just a little skeptical that we'd be able to bring in what's a revolutionary technology in IndyCar, not necessarily in motorsports as a whole, but something like a hybrid engine. I'm skeptical that it wouldn't dramatically increase costs for teams where we were complaining about aero kits just a couple of years ago and the cost of those. I think power plants take that to a whole nother level.
Yeah. I agree with both you guys. I'm skeptical, but you know, maybe somebody out there can educate us more and we can be surprised. But I will say I'm not against it if it, you know, if it can be competitive with Honda and Chevy, I don't have a problem with it, but you know, I'm just skeptical on the whole cost aspect of it.
And I'd like to add one thing. You know, yeah. For me, I do feel like I am a traditionalist. But bringing in the hybrid engine wouldn't be that conflicting to me. I think the biggest problem I would have is if it was like quiet or something of that nature.
Right.
But, you know, if we're bringing innovation back to the sport, you know, that's something that's been dearly missed. And at the very least, it would be interesting. And it's not like we didn't go through, you know, the late 60s with the turbine engines. And obviously those were scrutinized at the time because of their lack of sound, which is something that would happen today as well. But I think I could forfeit a little bit of the audio aesthetic, for lack of a better term, just to see some innovation back at the track, namely at the 500. I think that would be interesting, like you said, to see if somebody could come in with a hybrid engine and try to compete with Chevrolet and Honda staying with traditional formats. If everybody went to a hybrid formula, then I think I'd be a little less interested because I want to see the competition between the two formats. But that's kind of my outlook on it.
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point there about the innovation. It's definitely definitely intriguing. So I will turn it back over to Jess for the next fan question.
Okay, actually, on that note, let me point out.
Yeah.
Or let me ask, I guess, not point out. Do you actually ever see IndyCar going back and letting manufacturers or teams do innovation for the 500? Or do you see it being basically what we have now for the, you know, foreseeable future?
I think innovation could make a quote-unquote return, but it's all about the almighty dollar. If it's within, you know, a team budget that keeps the sport healthy, I think they'll go, all right, we can open this up a little bit. But if they do the research and they go, you know, this engine, you know, hybrid engine possibility is more expensive than we think, I think IndyCar will say, no, I'm going to shut it down.
Yeah. The way I look at it, in IndyCar's current state and the state of the series, what it's going to be in the next 2 to 3 years, I don't see them getting to a point where they're comfortable enough or feel healthy enough to essentially open the rule book up to development of that nature. And anytime you open up the rule book, it's going to force you to open up your pockets. So maybe if like everything goes in the right direction with potentially picking up a third manufacturer, the next generation chassis goes over really well, you know, things like that have to go right if there's going to be any opportunity for open development down the road, because honestly, we got to start with more money than where we're at right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see it happening in the foreseeable future. Would it be nice? Heck yes. Would the fans be excited? Absolutely. But like you said, I don't know that the series is going to be in a position where they feel comfortable enough to do that. So moving on, fan question, we'll call it number four. I really don't know exactly where we're at. This one is from our buddy George and David Lighting. They kind of did a combo. So this is going to be like a two-part question. So the first part is your favorite non-race day tradition during the month of May. It could be the parade, party you do, anything like that. And I'm going to go with Tanner for this one.
Honestly, for me, it doesn't really happen at the track. When I first started going to the 500, I camped out. And over time, it's kind of built into a tradition on its own where we camp over at a campground near Lucas Oil Raceway. And I'm still doing it this year, even though during practice week I'll be at like an Airbnb and quote unquote living nice comparatively. But man, I love camping out and being around the race fans, and you know, great time for me to hang out with my dad. My dad lives in Oregon, and so it's one of the few times each year that I get to see him. And I've also been able to recruit, you know, my cousin who's bringing his dad for the first time this year. So honestly, like that first day where we set up camp, that's a pretty exciting day to get everybody together again, have a few beers, and just get excited for the big weekend ahead.
I love it. Campground and beer sounds very exciting to me.
It's by my house, so we might have to make the trip up the street.
Crash the party.
Yes, yes.
Good thing to know, because I was trying to figure out where you moved to in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
My answer would be carb day, you know, that first or that, you know, that last practice, everything. The last practice in the Freedom 100, which, you know, almost every year is an amazing race. And it was a little pit stop competition. I can't say I stick around for the concert. I don't even remember who it was last year, and I know I won't be sticking around for it this year. Or at least paying attention to it this year. But, you know, everything that's on track on carb day is just so much fun to watch. You know, almost all 33 cars are, you know, pretty much out there at the same time. There's a lot going on. Like I said, the Freedom 100 is an awesome race. So it's just, you know, the anticipation builds as it's finally Memorial Day weekend and the race is just about there.
Okay, so mine is Fast Friday, because I feel like that's when you really get a taste of what the cars can do for the year. I mean, I know they've been practicing for 4 days at that point, but we like to call that sandbagging. And then on Friday, they come out and they really show what they've got. And it's just so much fun, and especially happy hour, you know, watching them really lay down the laps is just so much fun, and it's so exciting, and it leads into qualifying the next day perfectly. Okay, so then our next question, our next half of this question, I guess I should say, is what is our favorite race day tradition? And I'm going to go first because Mike's going to try to steal it.
Aww.
I like getting there at 6 a.m. and hearing the bomb go off to open the speedway. That's my favorite part of the day. It's just like magic in the air. How about you, Mike?
Well, I wasn't going to pick that, so good try. I am going to pick really just the whole, you know, back home again in Indiana, the, you know, national anthem, that kind of the build up to driver start your engine parts, really just I can't stand still, you know, goosebumps, you know, the whole time. You know, it's like a little kid on Christmas morning type feeling for me. So that would be my favorite race day tradition. But nice try for stealing it, Jess. I give you credit. because I have talked about that on Twitter.
I haven't even been there yet.
I know. Last year we missed it because somebody got a late start.
Yeah.
So I will turn it over to Tanner.
Yeah, no, those are all great. One that comes to mind is Taps. I love that moment when everybody goes silent for a good 60 seconds, and that's pretty impressive to get 300,000 plus to be as quiet as possible. And also, once the cars fire up and they leave the front stretch for that first parade lap, whenever they come back around for that first time, that's always one that I get so excited about, and that's when you really feel it in your chest that the new year is about here and the green flag's about to drop. That's pretty impressive, especially for anybody that's been there for their first time. I always try to look over if I've brought somebody for their first time that year, because that's normally a pretty special moment.
I love it. So I will jump in with our Patreon shout outs before I hand it back to Jess. So I'm going to do the top half of the list here. First off, thanks to our newest subscriber, Mark Van Niekerk. Always good for some IndyCar discussion up in Canada. So thank you very much, Mark, for joining on here. I'm just going to go right up the list here. Thank you to Lyndall McMurphy, Carrie Chim, Jason Camps, who I'm sure we'll see around the track this weekend, our buddy George, David Lighting. Thank you again to Darcy Bretz. And last but not least, Mr. Colin Taylor. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, guys, thank you so much. Okay, so I'm going to go right on with our next fan question. And this one is from Matthew Grunholz. What is our pump-up song if we were going to be racing in the 500? Tanner, I'm going to go with you first.
Oh, man. That is tough. You guys are going to laugh, but I'm going to go... I've been on an Ariana Grande kick. It's got to be Seven Rings. That's what I'm going to go with today.
I don't know that song, so I can't laugh, but I mean, hey, everybody's got their own taste in music.
Go check it out. You might get hype, man. You might get hype.
Yeah, I'm going to have to listen to it too, because I don't know it either, but I will definitely listen to it.
There we go.
So I am going to take the music in a different direction here. I'm going to go with... Well, if anybody knows me really well and knows my taste in music, they're not going to be surprised here. But a song called Waking Up by my buddies in 10 years. It's a really great song. Got a nice beginning to it. Check it out. I know actually a few of our listeners have checked them out after me recommending it, like every time I talk about music. So, Jess, go ahead.
Okay, mine is... it's by Kesha, and it's called Motherfucking Woman, and it is definitely a pump-up song. I even have, like, a sweatshirt with it printed on there, because it's just fun, and it's crazy, and it would be perfect for that mood.
I love it. I think we have a couple more fan questions and one more news topic to get to, so go ahead, Jess.
Okay. So number six, roughly, give or take a couple that had multi parts. This is from our lovely co-host who could not be with us this week. He wants to know which one of us is going to win in a go-kart race.
Why don't we give Tanner the floor to give his opinion on which host would win a race before we obviously all just pick ourselves.
Yeah, man. I hate to do it, but I really think I could win. We need to get some sort of gathering together during the month of May. We got to go to K1 or Sarah Fisher's place and settle this for real. But man, I got to think my iRacing background would help me out. But I want to hear what you guys say too.
Jess, I'll let you go next.
Okay, wait though. Have you ever actually done a go-kart or just iRacing?
I have just K1 speed. I've been there a few times. And I think I've done relatively well, but I don't know. Maybe it's the confidence. I think we'd all have the confidence. So I'd like to see really what the timesheet said at the end of the day.
Okay. I was just curious. I didn't know. So I do not race on any sim racing. I don't really play on the computer much. I don't have time, unfortunately. I wish I did, but I drive what is basically a street legal go-kart.
Accurate.
And Mike has been in my car and knows that I know where the gas pedal is.
Accurate.
Okay.
What is this car? I have to know now.
I drive a Fiat 500 Abarth.
There we go. I understand now.
Yeah. So I think that I would win. And I also have done some karting. Being from around here, it's kind of hard to not go karting for, you know, fun, just random night. Not necessarily during the month of May or anything like that. So I'm going to vote for myself, of course.
Yeah. So since he's getting married this week, I am going to say that it's definitely not going to be Matt. and I'm going to switch it up here. I'm not going to pick myself. I'm going to say Jess would win because I've seen the way she drives. But I do love an outing at Sarah Fisher's. The road course there is a lot of fun. I did it with Makai Stevens last year and held up pretty well, at least on the timing sheet. So if we can figure out a day where we can get there, I think we need to make it happen. So we will try to get somebody who's not racing to take video and throw it up on our Facebook page. I'll turn it back over to Jess.
Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of news again to break up the fan questions. So was that, I think it was yesterday, yeah. Rick Mears came out and said that he thinks that a windscreen is actually a better option than the little piece that they've got currently. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to throw my opinion in here first. I agree, Rick Mears. The problem is that right now they can't figure out how to make it work. So I think that when IndyCar figures that out, I feel like they'll definitely do the windscreen over the piece that they've opted for right now. But the piece that they have now is going to help in the interim. And I think that IndyCar, as per usual, is doing everything they can as quickly as they can to protect their drivers. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Just a quick note. Yeah, I think you're right. And the one thing I did want to say about the, I forget the name of it, the AFP device that they put on the car, you know, starting this weekend, some drivers saying, well, listen, I noticed it. It's different, blah, blah, blah. You know, when you're going 220 miles an hour and you're looking to the left, you're definitely not going to notice it. And when you're looking left and right at cars, you know, turning left and right, you might notice it at first, but I think after a while, you just tend to get used to it. It's sort of, you know, not to talk about the halo, but you hardly ever hear Formula One guys even mention the halo anymore. So I think it's just something that they'll get used to, you know, this year, whether it's a temporary thing or it stays on the car, even with a, you know, a windscreen. But I think he's 100% right, and I still predict that next year we will have a windscreen, just based on, you know, some comments from Jay Fry about, oh, I've got some game changing announcements for 2020 to talk about during the month of May. So not to give all of Jay's news away, but I think that'll be one. So he makes a great point, and he mentions in the article that he had to, you know, he told some drivers that, you know, when you're looking down the racetrack going 215 miles an hour, that you don't even notice it anymore. So, you know, it's just another little thing to get used to. And I'm sure after days of practice and the race, you know, drivers won't even notice it anymore.
Yeah. As far as the AFP, I think I can stomach it a little bit better, 'cause I know it's not the permanent solution. You know, like you mentioned, Mike, they've told us on more than one occasion that this isn't the be-all, end-all. This is phase one with a much different and greater plan coming after it. So for one, I don't even think it's that hard on the eyes. You know, for liveries that have it painted the same color as the primary car color, you hardly actually even notice it. And if you're looking from afar, you won't notice it hardly at all. I agree that the windscreen is the most aesthetically pleasing option, and if they can figure out the performance dynamic of it, would be the safest option too, as far as the wraparound protection that it provides. Obviously, right now the AFP has a small window of debris that it could actually deflect, but in the release by IndyCar, James Hinchcliffe mentioned that if the AFP had been in place back in, I think it was 2015 or so, when he had his concussion at the Indianapolis Grand Prix from a piece of debris that hit his car or hit his head, you know, had it been in place, it would have saved him from that injury. He said that himself. So since I know it's not the full-time solution, I'm okay with it, and it's better than nothing at this point. So if there's any percentage, a chance that it can help protect the drivers a little bit better, then I can deal with it for now.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's, like I said, I think it's, as of right now, I think it's the best option they've got going. Okay, so we are going to jump right back into a couple more fan questions. I am going to go with this next one is from our newest Patreon, Mark Van Niekerk. And it is, with all of the talk of changing traditions, which tradition do you feel is most important and most sacred for the 500? How about Tanner?
Oh boy. Man, I'm really trying to refrain from what's been going on the last few weeks, but I'm going to do it. Screw it. I'm going to do it. It's the starting number, the field of 33. You know, I just can't get on board with having guaranteed entries in the Indianapolis 500, and here's the reason why. You know, one of the arguments for guaranteed entries into the 500 for full-time participants is that it would theoretically bring more people to the series as full-time entrants. I don't particularly foresee that being the case. I think in the scenario, you hope that, you know, guaranteed entries would bring 3, 4, maybe 5 more teams into the fray as far as full-time entries in maybe the next 2 years, let's say. But in reality, the people that are in the sport now aren't participating because of financial reasons. It's not like there are people sitting on the sidelines that could do this right now, but they fear that missing the 500 would hamper their full season experience. That's just not the case. The people that are participating as it is now are essentially the only people that have the means to do so. So adding a guaranteed slot for full-time entries would maybe yield 1 or 2 extra teams in the net over the next couple of years as far as full-time entries, but I don't think that's an equitable payoff to essentially devaluing the importance of Indianapolis 500 qualifications. So the fastest 33, it does matter to me. I understand that Roger and Michael and even Chip Ganassi want to protect their assets, but to be quite frank, it's not their teams that even have the most to lose. So that's my opinion on it.
I can't argue that. Great answer. I like that it's well thought out. So you know, chime in with your thoughts there. So I'm going to not use that answer, and I'm going to go with any of the pre-race traditions. I know there's some balloon controversy, so I'm going to skip talking about the balloons because I don't honestly know enough about how it affects the environment or doesn't affect the environment. But anything from, you know, the national anthem, back home again in Indiana, no matter who sings it, you know, all of that, I think is super important to stay in there in like it is. And I wouldn't want any of that sort of tradition to change.
I like it. So I'm going to say what my first answer was is nearly the same as Tanner, except for one specific thing that having 33 does is it allows the 11 rows of three. And I feel like that's such a nice salute to the fans who are there. They line up so pretty, which they do not usually do at races. and it's just the moment of anticipation that you've literally been waiting for all year. And I think that that particular moment, the 11 rows of three coming around, is just almost more than my little emotions can handle. So that's my answer.
If you don't mind, I'd like to add one thing. One tradition that's kind of gone by the wayside since Tony George started giving the command, no longer do they say, gentlemen, start your engines, or ladies and gentlemen, start your engines. It's drivers, start your engines now. And I think that's a small detail that probably most fans there on race day don't really notice. But for those that watch the race on television or went to the race for many, many years, dating back to, there was a controversy surrounding what Tony Holman would say when Janet Guthrie came around and they didn't know how he was going to announce the command to start engines. And it was so important, the gentlemen start your engines command, and for it to be said in that way, that they modified the saying to where gentlemen start your engines was still the last few words that were said, but also accommodating the ladies starting the race from that point on. So that's a small thing that I've kind of missed in recent years.
I understand that. I didn't really honestly think about it, but that's a good point. So go ahead, Jess.
Yeah, I'm curious why they changed that. So now we are going to go ahead and start wrapping things up. We are going to jump straight into our pitfalls. And guys, if you don't mind, this lady is going to go first.
All good.
Do it.
Okay, so I'm going to make mine real quick, real short and sweet. Post a picture up on our Twitter at some point so you all can see what I'm talking about. They released, let me see, this says 2 hours ago. I don't think that's right. Probably this morning at some point. They released Kevin Harvick's millennial paint scheme. For
oh boy,
for the all-star race. Millennial paint scheme sums it up, except the sad part is that technically I'm a millennial and this just makes me cringe, but so it is Busch beer, of course. It has an AF and we all know what that means. It has a hashtag squad goals. It has fire emojis. It has an avocado and toast. It says yeet. It says turnt left. I mean, like, it is just as cringeworthy as it gets. Oh, and did I fail to mention that it is a pale baby pink color? Yeah. Okay.
Awful.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the word yeet means, and I am also a millennial, and no, please don't tell me what it means. It's weird. I'll just leave it at that. Tanner, since you're our guest, I'll let you go next.
Well, thank you, sir. Oh, my pitfall, it goes back onto the IndyCar owners in the sport currently. How Carlos Munoz isn't in this race this year is completely beyond me. Short of anybody who has won the race in the last 6 years, there hasn't been a better driver at Indianapolis. Munoz, in six starts since 2013, he's completed every single lap possible, 1,200 out of 1,200. He's led laps in four out of those six races, two runner-up finishes, each for Andretti Autosport. And maybe even the most impressive thing was he commanded a 2017 bucket of bolts for Foyt to a 10th place finish. And those cars were absolute sleds, god-awful machines. And so, you know, with his track record at Indianapolis, I understand financials really command all. And the word on the street is Carlos just doesn't really bring money at this point in his career. But man, it's a shame to see someone of his talent sitting on the sidelines at Indy, because he's been right there so many times. And you know, obviously the Speedway picks the winner, but you'd like to think that his time is coming if he gets another chance. But yeah, that was tough to see someone like him missing the race.
I don't know what Jess thinks, but yeah, when he brought that bucket of bolts, which is a great analogy, by the way, to a 10th place finish and had a couple good other races that year towards the end of the year for Foyt, you couldn't help but be impressed. And I think that's a good one. I don't know if Jess agrees or disagrees, but I'll let her chime in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just flat a shame that he's not going to be there. I mean, obviously, we've seen some of the results that he's put up and the emotion behind those results. And I think that, I think that speaks volumes to how much it would mean to him to actually come back and put together a win. So I think it's a shame.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I will wrap it up. I'm going to... since Matt's not here, I'm going to channel Matt's inner Ferrari disgust and go back to the Baku race from 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, with Ferrari's, I don't know if we want to call it strategy or lack of strategy for Charles Leclerc leading the race after, you know, getting out in front. And then all of a sudden he's losing 2 seconds roughly per lap, you know, to the Mercedes drivers, and they don't bring him in to change for new tires until he's already back in, I don't know, fourth or fifth place. Just doesn't make any sense to me what they were trying to accomplish or what they thought they would accomplish. I don't know. I know Jess didn't watch, but Tanner, I don't know if you saw it and were equally as confused, but really just a frustrating thing to see, you know, Ferrari mess up a chance for, you know, Leclerc to jump up into a podium type position at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's been unfortunate for Ferrari because it seems like this year they can't quite get out of their own way. And what hurts even worse is Mercedes has been there each time to kind of pick up the slack and make them pay for it. So Leclerc's time is coming. You know, it's clear to see that, but man, it's tough to see him miss out on some prime opportunities early on in this Formula One season.
Yeah, very well said. Jess, any thoughts on Ferrari's debacle strategy?
We'll just say Ferrari. That's it.
I should make that the episode title.
I mean, that just kind of like sums up them right now. I mean, it just, you know, it's a weekly thing of there they go again.
Yeah, so. I switched it up and I didn't talk about George Russell, so for once I felt bad for George Russell for the manhole cover exploding on the back of his car, which was announced this week that Baku is paying Williams for the damage, which is probably the most money Williams has made all year. I guess I did just make fun of them anyway.
That was good though. That was pretty good.
So just wrapping it up here, guys, again, we have a new partner in Eargasm Earplugs. I know, ridiculous name, but fantastic stuff. You can find the link to their website right in our show notes, and I will tweet it out at some point over the weekend. So check it out. They've got some great deals going on right now. I wear them at the racetracks and at concerts, and it definitely helps my ears from ringing afterwards for a couple days. And then lastly, Colton Herta will be our guest of honor on our Harding Steinbrenner episode, Pit Lane Parlay Experience with Harding Steinbrenner episode during the month of May. I hope we can get maybe two out of him since we'll be there for a couple weeks. We shall see. And then lastly, a new announcement that we just figured out a couple hours ago. We're going to be doing something similar to the Harding Steinbrenner episodes with Sage Karam as a one-off for the month of May. Different interviews with him throughout the couple weeks in Indy, before practice, during practice, after qualifying, something like that. So you'll see a couple of extra episodes during the lovely month of May. I hope everybody likes them and plenty to do. Tanner, we'll see you in a couple days. Thank you for joining us tonight. Matt, if you're still listening here, congrats on getting married, I guess, tomorrow. Enjoy. Hopefully you can watch the race at your wedding. If you can pull that off, I will buy you a beer in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And with that, Jess, go ahead and sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
This is the RaceCast weather forecast for the IndyCar Grand Prix at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Thursday will be a stormy day across central Indiana, and the Storm Prediction Center has a marginal risk up for the southern two-thirds of the state, including the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We look to have storms move into the area around the 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. time frame, with storms continuing to be possible for the day until around the 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. time frame. While it may not rain the entire day, showers and storms will be likely at any time. The main threats from this event will be from damaging winds up to 60 miles per hour, heavy rain at times, and dangerous cloud-to-ground lightning. There is not a tornado threat with this system. The main window for stronger to severe storms will be from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. When it is not raining, skies will be cloudy with temperatures starting off in the upper 60s at 8 a.m. and only rising a degree or two around 70 degrees. Winds will be breezy out of the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour possible at times. Rainfall amounts throughout the day will be around 1 inch. Stay weather aware, and if you hear thunder, move indoors immediately because you are close enough to the parent thunderstorm to be struck by lightning. Friday and Saturday continue to look much better and cooler. Skies look to be mostly cloudy on Friday, but some of those clouds will dissipate a little. Afternoon highs will be in the upper 50s after starting off in the lower 50s. Winds will be out of the northwest at 8 to 12 miles per hour. Saturday will start off with mostly clear skies, but clouds will be on the increase throughout the day. A stray shower may move into the area, but that will be well after the events are over for the day. Highs will top out in the mid-60s after starting off in the mid-40s. Winds will be out of the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. This forecast was done on Wednesday evening prior to the event. The forecast could change between now and the Grand Prix on Saturday. Follow RaceCast Weather on Twitter and Facebook at RaceCastWX and on Instagram at RaceCastWeather. And you can also follow us on our website at RaceCastWeather.com. I'm meteorologist Scott Martin. Have a great week.